Tina's in her master's program studying data science, and she just writes as clearly as she can what she's learning about. The world has taken notice of Tina Mary for doing that. Everyone can do that. Don't be shy about it. Just do it. Just keep looking for ways to be and do data science.
Hello everyone, today we have with us Tom Ives, who is a lead data scientist at UL Prospector. Tom is a creator of the Integrated ML and AI, which is a community helping data scientists and startups in the data science community. And Tom has been a mentor of many data science enthusiasts and is a father of nine, and which includes five internationally adopted children. And welcome on the show, Tom. How are you?
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here.
Tom has 30 plus years of experience in the professional industry, and it spans multiple domains, and the expertise is a lot vast. Tom, I think this session might be helpful for a lot of people, be it beginners into data science, not only freshers, but also experienced people who are in their mid-career and want to moving into data science. I think they'll be getting some cues out of your journey, and hopefully we can help them in any way.
I hope so. The world was a little different when I was everyone else's age, but hopefully I have something I can share that will help.
Definitely. I'm sure about that. And also, I would like to really thank Tom for being joining us today. He generously joined today, even he had a bit of fever going through. So thanks once again, Tom, and we hope you recover soon. Okay, so Tom, we know that you're not from a data career, a data field, a data science background. You completed your mechanical engineering PhD and master's as well, and you were into core engineering roles in your previous career. So how did you start into data science, and what was the motivation behind it?
I think it might help the audience to know there was no such thing as data science, even when I was in graduate school, which was not at the beginning of my career that I was in graduate school. However, there were data science topics within our curriculums to deal with certain things. So it was at that time that, for example, one of my control systems design professors that I'm still good friends with, he was teaching a course on expert systems that we called fuzzy logic back then.
Yeah.
And it was a great course. And then there were courses on neural networks. And I took one of those, audited another one. The professor was even beginning to send his students to me for some guidance because I had written some pretty advanced neural network programs. And we didn't have Python back then. So I was doing this all in C. And they were pretty advanced, growing network, adaptive networks for neural networks. And we didn't know to call it data science. I was just seeing the limits that we had in our traditional methods and felt that I needed to add these to my tool suite. And in my PhD research, I ended up needing to use quite a bit of expert system type modeling to program. So, by the way, my background in my graduate education has to do with multiphysical systems modeling and controls. Well, that's a very close cousin to data science. Rather than you starting from data, you're starting from first principles physics, but if you look at first principles physics, all of that's built on data science principles. So you're using the tools at yet another layer and doing predictive modeling. So a lot of the principles are very similar, especially when you get into things like control system design and vibrations and controls. Especially, it's just a beautiful world of analytics, and the two systems cross paths a lot, or excuse me, the two areas of methodologies. And so of course, engineers are doing a lot of regression too when they're doing different types of modeling. We would typically call those empirical models when we would do that instead of using first principles physics. And then over time, just due to canceled programs or projects, needing to move around and jobs, I started to see that, we need to, before I even heard the term dashboards, I thought, we need dashboards. We need to automate a data collection. We need to have some reporting websites that report these results. So I was getting into all that. And then there was a professor at an extension for the University of Idaho that asked me to co-teach design of experiments with him. And I said, Larry, I've never taught that. And he said, oh, with your background, you'll do fine. It'll be fun to have you. I said, okay. I really got into it. And I don't know if anyone knows what design of experiments it is, but it's really a bridge between data science and engineering experimentation. And so it is a very close cousin or even a sibling to data science. And I really got into that and enjoyed teaching it and using it and employing the principles. And before I knew it, there was a friend of mine who went off to be a professor, but I took over his work at a company that we were at together. And he'd been doing some advanced statistical based modeling, but he was doing it all in Excel. And I said, Marcos, we are not using Excel anymore. And we took it into Python, and he was thrilled with how much it had improved it. And then I had to do some advanced stuff in Python, but turned it into a big reporting system, and the rest was history from there.
Yeah, and also as you mentioned that your background had a close relationship with data science, so did that help you, accelerate your advancement into the data career, or it was the other way around, or it just complemented it?
Oh, absolutely. So a mechanical engineer reached out to me the other day, and he said, Tom, I've been doing computational fluid dynamics, but I'm feeling drawn to data science. And I said, I don't mean to say it's going to be a cakewalk, but it's not going to be very hard for you. You're going to just love this stuff. It's not going to be too hard for you, but there's some new terminology. There's some new things. But when I finally decided, oh, wow, someone had to point out to me, Tom, you're a data scientist. Yeah, I guess I'd say that. But do you know what's going on? And I went, I guess not. And so when I looked at all the other techniques, it was really easy to catch up with them and go, oh, yeah, okay, that's easy. And yeah. I would say what helped the most, of course, all the modeling that I'd done all those years, that helped immensely. But really, it was knowing how to take the advanced math and program it that helped me more than anything. That just made it a lot easier. And I started learning Python 20 plus years ago now. And when I first learned it, I had already known Fortran and Basic and C++. And I just thought Python was a dream world. I even learned awk before I learned C, or before I learned Python. And Python was so powerful. I was blown away, and it changed my life, frankly.
Yeah, and mentioning about learning Python and neural networks, so what was your learning process? Because you didn't have all the academic knowledge of data science, so there must have been some courses or some way that you learned the basics of it, the core data science part. So how was that?
Let me qualify what you just said. We weren't even calling what we were doing data science back in those days. That term didn't even exist yet. We were doing neural networks or expert systems or linear regression. But engineers learn not necessarily neural networks and expert systems, but they learn a lot of data science modeling techniques in their normal curriculum. But when I was doing neural networks, I was learning to code them from scratch in C. That's where we were at in those days. So I even had to do the memory allocation and deallocation and all those kinds of fancy things. Because for a simple network, you wouldn't necessarily have to do that. But again, I was making these adaptive architecture networks that would grow until it found the near optimal size network to accomplish the task that it wanted to accomplish. So these weren't easy things to program. And then now with Python, there's a module for it. So it's no big deal. But I still like to code things from scratch just so I understand them better.
Yeah, and speaking of that, do you think it's a better way to, learn things from scratch? As you mentioned, you were doing your coding in C and doing the deallocation and the allocation part manually and then moving on to Python. So do you think that's a better process to start from basic thing, learn how the basics and the under the hood things work and then move on to more advanced part? Maybe that'll make a person a better seasoned professional, not in data science, but in general way.
Well, let's be realistic with one another. Data science and all there is to learn about it no one person can know it all
Yeah.
at all depth. So you have to come up with your own learning plan and decide what do you want to know. And I would say there's many things you just want to know conceptually and know how to employ a Python or an R module for and just get the job done. Now, I'll give you an example. In the engineering world, we have this methodology called finite element analysis. Very difficult. A similar thing would be computational fluid dynamics. It has to do with a very complicated way to predict things at a finite element level, at a very small level, and get great detail. Most engineers do not know how to code those tools from scratch. Now, in the data science realm, so they use pre-canned modules or tools that they buy to do those analyses. With the data science world, Python and R are free. Most people use that. Yes, there's Azure. There's other tools out there like that that you can buy that are modular and you can build up your models from. But the nice thing with data science is you can decide, I really want to understand the depths of the concepts of this particular tool.
Yeah.
Yes, your insights will grow exponentially if you learn how to code that from scratch without NumPy or SciPy. And people that follow my blog, they see that I get into that. In fact, I've done that for neural networks. I haven't written the post yet. I've done it for decision trees. I haven't written the post yet. And the reason I'm doing that is I decided I really wanted to become a very good practitioner of reinforced learning. I'm not at the level I want to be yet. And when I get to a certain level with reinforced learning, I will catch back up all those posts. But there's a reason I'm going about it that way. But the short answer to your question is it's always great if you can dive deep and learn to code something from scratch without the modules, but you can't do it for everything necessarily.
Yep.
Unless you're doing it full time, you might stand a chance then.
Yeah, I think that sums up pretty well. You mentioned that you've been writing blogs about not only just building something from scratch, but also other things. So Storm, you had started integrated machine learning and AI more than 2 years ago, and you have been providing services and education and mentorship in this space. So how did the idea behind this spawn in your mind?
It's a little bit of preaching what I practice now. I just thought it's like you pointed out, will people see me as a mechanical engineer, or will they see me as a generalized analyst, someone that can do both? And I thought, okay, there's not a concern that they'll see me as a multi-physics modeling expert, but how do I just show the world you don't need to worry about me as a data scientist? And so I started looking at the blog space as a whole and thinking, what's missing? I thought, I'd really like to show some people how to do these detailed things. And then that way I can represent myself to the world as here's my data science skills too. And it started that way, but I realized too, life's uncertain. You can get laid off, the company can die, whatever. And yeah. So I just thought, okay, this way I have this company as a fallback. So for example, on the side, I do startup work. I do volunteer work, so I'm trying to work with an African organization to help them with some free curriculum materials. All of that can be done under the umbrella of integrated machine learning and AI, but my priority each day is to do the best work I can for UL Prospector. And then because I just love what I do these other things on the side. So I realized even if I do get a job, I wanted integrated machine learning and AI to always be there, whether I have a job or not. And a funny story, I was actually invited to do something for the U.S. military, but they were slow getting their contract to me. And I was deeply honored by this opportunity. And it was well suited to my overall background, but I ended up passing it up when UL approached me because I really liked the vision of what Prospector was doing. And I'd never quite had a chance, Chayan, to start something from scratch. And so I get to do that at UL Prospector, and that's why I took that.
So how far, I mean, Tom, have you come in these 2 years with respect to integrated ML and AI? And what are the future plans in your mind to make it, as you mentioned, to have it as a fallback option? Then you must be planning something to make it a better, a more, scale it to a larger platform or something like that?
Absolutely. I have some other blog authors that they're like family members to me now. Yeah. And we're going slow because we're all busy with our careers, but there's a lot of posts in the wings just waiting to be published. Why are we not in a hurry? We really care about super good quality. And I'm not trying to put down other blog posts out there, but we try to really make sure, no, this is a unique post. This isn't a lot of other posts. And we just want to make sure it adds a lot of value and it's unique. And yeah, but also, boy, there was another point I wanted to make. I'm sure it'll come back to me, but we're just trying to be very careful that way. And yeah, like I know that Manpreet and Tina are out there, and I know Giovanna's mm-hmm. out there. So if I, without going into a lot of details, there's a real important post that Manpreet and I are about to release with Abdul, our other author friend. We just feel like this post is super important to a lot of concerns people are having. Then there's a post that Tina and I with Lewis Owen are about to finally publish. And we really had no idea how big a deal this post was going to be until we presented it a few times. And I've done even presented it inside UL, and the reception to that material actually shocked us quite a bit. But again, it comes back to this theme of saying, we're going to just really look for where are the big holes out there in our community and how we can help fill them.
Absolutely. And speaking of the bloggers who are supporting you in this, be it Tina or Manpreet, so is there any way the people who are watching us right now, they must be a few bloggers out there as well. So can they join you? Is there any way they can contact you and then join you in this mission?
That is a possibility. So that's how I met Manpreet online, and we just became friends. She'd call me her mentor, but we're more father-daughter than we are mentor-mentee. And the same thing happened. I saw Tina posting on LinkedIn, and I just basically said, I want you. And she said, okay. And then we all pinched ourselves when Lewis and Abdul joined us. So usually it's been by my invite. We do have people approach us. And now I say, okay, but you got to get through Manpreet and Tina. And so and it's not like we're trying to be mean or anything. Life happens too. It's hard to write a post, especially with me at the helm. I'm worse than peer review. I'm nice about it, but I think Tina was a little shocked at how hard we worked to get her post out, but she really delivered an exceptionally good post, and it really helped the community when it was done. And it's going to become a series, the one she started.
Yeah, that's great. And speaking of the relationships you've been making with your connections and your supporters, and I've also seen many testimonies of you being an amazing teacher and a mentor. So what's your approach towards mentorship, which makes you different than others, or maybe which makes people approach towards you for a mentorship or any, you know, idea?
I'm going to give this away for free, Chayan. And I want to encourage people, be at your keyboard or have a pencil and paper. You're going to want to write this down, okay, and you're going to want to memorize it. And that's, this is going to take a while to say.
All right.
I want you to write in all capitals.
Okay.
C. Let me say it. C-A-R-E.
Yeah. Care.
Okay. That's it.
That's a beautiful answer.
I'm serious, though. I'm not trying to make light of this. I started integrated machine learning and AI. I thought, I'm going to care. And then I look back over my career and I thought, where did you step in it the most, Tom? Where did you blow it the hardest? And I didn't care enough. Yeah, if you look at my career, you go, oh, you care a lot right there. I can see. Yeah, but I gave up caring. I got burned out. I threw in the towel too easily. Okay, but what about over here where you did that? Yeah, I didn't care enough. But you were doing this amazing thing back at this time. I didn't care enough. And what I would say to someone that maybe is getting burned out for caring too much, take a break. Rest and rejuvenate and find some encouragement, some healing, and start caring again. Because when you look back over the course of your life, the thing you want to be most guilty of is caring.
And I think people
I'll just say real quickly, you want to do better in your professional roles, care more. That means, and forgive my French, you get your butt out of your seat and you go walk around, or you virtually meet with people now, and you say, hey, where can I help you? I want to help you with data, but where do you have the most needs? How can I really help you? And then don't do it in a show-off way. Start giving them little tiny bits of caring, like just a bar chart maybe, just some data lookups, and then build on that. Build the relationships and the data will flow. Care.
Yep.
I like this model has good parsimony, by the way. It's very simple. It's very elegant. So you were going to say, Cheyenne, sorry.
Yeah. So I was mentioning that, as you were mentioning, people might get burned out very soon. So there is a lot of competition. People are achieving things every day. I know people just see them and they get bogged down. But the amount of things others have achieved and they have not achieved. So I think taking breaks regularly and then just focusing on your strengths and, you know, coming back at it, it's the right way to go.
Cheyenne, I will try to say this without crying.
Okay.
I pick people up now and I'm shocked I'm able to do it. But my mentees, and it's very humbling for me to even call them that because I think they're so amazing. Life beats them up sometimes. All I'm doing is picking them up and saying, you're amazing. Let me pick you up. I want you to go take a break. I want you to lick your wounds. This happens to everyone. You're not alone. And I really care. I'm sorry you went through this crap, but just let's get over it and keep going. And even my toughest daughter, Manpreet, gets beat up. And unfairly, Manpreet, this is going to happen. It's not a matter of if this is going to happen again. It's just a matter of when. So go get some healing. Know your daddy loves you. Take a break and let's get going again. And she's amazing. But guys, that's why if you've watched any of my talks, to me, the future of data science is you, Cheyenne, and everyone listening right now. And we have to protect that potential. The world can be a harsh, cruel place. But if AI is going to be used for good, it's going to be because we have an amazing community. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, there must be a lot of people approaching you for mentorship, pinging you on LinkedIn or emailing you. So how do you select good mentees, or you select that, yes, I'm going to be a mentor for her or her or him? So how do you... is that process for you?
I need to change your perspective a minute, Cheyenne.
Okay.
Let's say you're sitting at this portal and gold keeps flowing through it. Would you ask me, how do you choose which piece of gold you're going to select? I say, I take it all. Let it flow. I got plenty of room to store it over here. That's how I see the people asking me for mentorship. But I try to use my skills to just say, okay, how can I handle this flow? So now we have a show on Saturday mornings. And I say, you know what? Your question's so important that I want you to come and get mentorship, not just from me, but from my friends. And we're going to give you the... I have limited perspective. I have a limited ability to connect to you. Even though I want to give you everything you need, I can't. But if you hear from all my friends, and I kid you not, Cheyenne, I encouraged a woman who was a little bit shy the first time she was on our pilot episode, and I watched her countenance go from being a little nervous to being glowing. Because not just my answers, I think she was more inspired by hearing the answers from everyone than just hearing them from me. And so that's one way, though. I also, once I write a really good message to a new mentee, I copy it and I save it. And over time, I refine it. And forgive me, guys, yes, I give you these big cut and copy and paste messages, but they really are from my heart. I've crafted them very carefully. And I encourage people, look, you want to be mentored by John Thompson. How can you do that? Buy his book. If you buy and read his book, that's better than having a 5-hour conversation with him. Why? Because you can refer back to it. And I can tell you this, I know John personally, he really cares about you. That's why he wrote the book. When you read these, like I'm reading the book by Sutton on reinforced learning, and I'll probably read it 5 times before I'm done, but I like Professor Sutton. He is a very nice man. You can tell that by the energy and care he put into writing that book. Has he tried to contact me since I wrote my Hump Day homage post on him? No. Am I worried about that? No, but I know he cares about me and he's happy that I'm learning from this book. And it took my daughters, frankly, to encourage me, it's okay that you do copy and paste messages. And then it was really Manpreet's inspiration. She has some awesome shows, and we decided, I really realized I just got to do a once a week call-in thing. And just to add to that, Harpreet is doing an amazing job on his Friday office hours. And so I join in on that just to contribute even more. So it's just a matter of trying to find ways to do it more efficiently now, but I never turn anyone down. And I keep improving those copy and paste messages.
I think that's what sets you apart from other mentors or other preachers in data science who maybe select their mentees or maybe have a process of selecting who they should mentor and who they should not. And you have a better perspective for that. And I think that sets you apart. And also I've read in one of your posts, Tom, that you mentioned that many of your students love you, but they also hate you. Some of them also hated you. And I couldn't understand why would any of your student would hate you for any reason. So please enlighten me.
Oh, okay. I'm going to just be real honest. I haven't always been the man talking with you today. I've had to grow out of some character issues. I've not always been a nice person in my life. I've been cocky. I've been arrogant. And when I compare being cocky and arrogant to being humble and just real, I choose the latter. I realized I love growth. I love feeling inspired, feeling blessed, but in a real way. And it dawned on me, you know what? We're all very blind. I don't mean completely blind, but we're all very blind. We're very ignorant. We're very powerless. I think the sooner that I accept that and quit trying to compensate for it, but just enjoy growing out of it, the happier I'll be. And so that's the man you see now, someone that recognizes that. But there were times where I taught and I felt there was a student that literally hated me. And now, was I trying to intentionally be unlovable? No. And possibly that student was being a bit of a jerk, but at the same time, and I'm talking when I was actually teaching at the university level. Some students really loved me and appreciated me. Sometimes I got great evals. Sometimes the whole class had a problem with the way I dumped projects on them. And I learned from all of that. I tried to think, I've encountered people that were really nice but weren't telling me what I needed to hear. And I've encountered people that were hypercritical, but some of what they were saying was true. And I've just learned over the years, filter it and take the truth and grow from it. And so I'm still learning to be that way. But we're always going to encounter someone that doesn't like us. And that's okay. We are at where we're at in life. And let's have a spirit of looking for the truth, looking for the true state that we're at, recognizing the state we want to be, and using that difference to drive forward to where we want to go. And so that's the man before you now. But No, I haven't always been the easiest person to be around, Cheyenne, unfortunately.
And I think that's what makes it different, and maybe the experience that has taught you from, I mean, varying different scenarios that you become the mentor of the person you are now. So that's also another thing too, maybe, which makes a person what he is at the moment. All the experiences he had, the people he has met, and everything like that. Yep. And
Yeah, there's sometimes I wish I could go back in time and relive my life with what I know now. And then I realized, but I could only do that if I had the memory of what I have now. And that would almost be unfair. Yeah, all those hard lessons, all those pains and hurts and embarrassments and falling down, all of that helped me. And I still am excited about the growth, but I tell you, I get scared and nervous just like all of you with the projects I face, with the job I have. Life can be tough, but it's fun. It's better just to focus on what you need to do to succeed and not worry too much.
yeah. And speaking of your job, so Tom, you're a lead data scientist at UL Prospector, and you also have worked in statistics and data science earlier as well. So how does your current role involve? What's the day-to-day work that you are doing at your current job?
So it's actually very challenging. It's the first time I can say I do something sexy, but I don't really do. It's not always sexy, trust me. So we get a lot of technical data sheets. They're either updates to existing ones or new ones. And usually it's in PDF format, but not always. Sometimes it's password protected, sometimes it's not. And we use these to either to update or grow a database of plastics materials. And I'm trying to automate that. And I'm making great progress, but it's not going as fast as we'd like. But my manager is super supportive. He's excited with the progress I've made. And just, I can tell you this, what's really helped is focusing on concepts. If I hadn't understood and remembered very high level principles like all machine learning problems are math problems. And I've got to turn, if I want to do something like, okay, what's the closest aligning existing technical data sheet in our database to this new one? Well, that's a math problem. I've got to tokenize all of these old documents a special way. It's, by the way, we learned the hard way. It's not natural language processing. We now call it technical language processing, but we have special tokenization routines, and then we use math. And it's very similar to something you would use with word vectorization or with GloVe, global vectors. But at the end of the day, it's just this super large hyperspace and saying, I want to align this document to this one. And you'd think, oh, wasn't there some existing thing? Trust me, I tried them all, they were too slow. And what's exciting is I can load a 63,000 page corpus into a sparse matrix in under a second and a half. The human won't even know what hit them. And then I can find the closest aligning document in under half a second. To me, that blew my mind. But it's really thankfully due to Python, NumPy, SciPy, and sparse matrices. But concept knowledge too. If I hadn't had all that, I couldn't have come there. And the sad thing is, even though I got that working and I got it to where it would store in SQL and I got over all the memory hurdles and all of that, I looked at it and go, Alex, my awesome manager, it's working, but sometimes this happens. And he goes, oh no, he's felt my pain. I said, so I think I've got a way around it. I'm gonna do it this way. He said, yeah, go try that. So now take two, but it'll work eventually. And then we'll get to use it throughout UL. And that'll be exciting to help a lot more groups with it just than just ours.
Absolutely. I think in you've been doing your current job as well and handling multiple roles aside from it. So there must be a lot of pressure on you. So you must be handling that, a lot of responsibilities along with the work. So is that a challenge for you sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. I told my manager and the leadership team that I'm friends with, by the way, they're my friends, but I say, guys, I can't tell you how encouraged I am with how well this work's going. But I feel the pressure every day knowing how much my teammates need it, because they're bogged down by these updates. And that I take that very seriously. But we continue to take encouragement from, once this is done, it'll help a lot of other people in UL too. And we now have a group of what we call Data Scientists Anonymous. We're basically lonely data scientists affected by COVID. And so we meet every Friday morning just to get together and encourage one another. And it's been exciting because some of the stuff we're working on, we're sharing with one another, and we're going to be able to collaborate to each other's mutual benefit. So that part's exciting.
Great. I think, Tom, it's now the time for the rapid fire. I'll be putting five questions on you, and you can answer in a candid way you want. So these might be a bit silly, but these might be insightful as well. And then before that, just for the audience who are watching us, so we have a questions section separate. So you can put down your questions in the questions section, and we'll be taking those with Tom after the session ends in the Q&A part. So whatever you have, just put it down in the questions section, and we'll take it up. All right.
So I see Tina says this, even I too wonder, and Tina's my daughter, by the way, wonder how Tom manages everything all together. He's amazing. I just want to dispel a myth here. I don't manage everything. Some things fall through the crack. I make sure my work at UL keeps going, but we frankly feel like we're behind on blog posts. Manpreet and Abdul and I are being very picky about the content on our latest post because we know it's so important, that there's a lot of things that just feel behind. But we do our best. It's like anything else in life.
That's what is needed. Just give your best at it. All right, Tom. So let's do the rapid fire now.
Okay.
So the first question, name three persons who you look up to with respect to data science.
Oh, there's so many.
The clock is ticking, Tom.
Yes. I'll just say Danny Ma because he cares, Andrew Jones because he cares, and David Langer because he's super cool. And cares.
Great. Worst career advice you ever got?
Study until you figure it out. In other words, take a break. And then, because after you take a break, it's usually, oh, now I see it.
Absolutely. Third question, one thing you hate about yourself.
There's so many. Hang on. No, I really don't hate myself, but probably failing on the disciplines I set for myself with my eating. I really try to eat very healthy, but sometimes I cave in a little bit. That probably is the one that plagues me the most.
Okay. Fifth question and the last one. Fourth question. Three life advices to a younger self. To your younger self.
Chill out, rest more, enjoy studying more.
Yeah. A fifth and last one, best and worst aspects of your career.
Taking mean people personally.
That's the worst.
That's the worst. Not trying to present, show my work more. It was what I should have done.
All right. And what's the best career, the best thing you have faced in your career up and long, the best moment or
when I really decided to go for something like this is risky but I believe in it, I'm just going to try it. Wished that when I would do that and it worked, just that was so thrilling, so exciting.
So we'll take a few more questions and then we'll see if we have any questions from the audience. So Tom, you've been in the industry for almost 30 years and more than that, and you
more
are, I
that,
think,
yeah.
Yeah, more than that, and you would be reaching your official retirement age pretty soon. And do you have any retirement plans, any post-retirement plans you have, apart from your data science career, anything like that, that you want to pursue once you take a break from your professional career?
So I've never really understood retirement per se. I think of it more as a point where I could say I have enough money to where I don't need to worry about reporting to an employer anymore. And then I would just start a business probably that was fun. I have been daydreaming about building things since I was three. I was just one of those fortunate people. I didn't even realize it was a gift, but I can design things in my mind and rotate them in 3D and look at, and I actually in my own 3D modeling system. So I'm constantly designing mechanical systems, structures in my mind, thinking of better ways to build things. I just hope to contribute more and more to humanity with those gifts as time goes on. To me, it's not, I love data science, but it's not just about data science. It's about where is there a need and how can I fill the hole?
Yeah, so that means you'll be continuing towards your contributions towards the community and making a better place in any which way you can.
Yeah.
That's great. And with this one, there's one question that we ask each of our guests that if a newbie in data science approached you and said that he or she has 3 months to learn data science, so what would be your step-by-step plan for him or her?
That sounds impractical. I'm not saying they can't learn it in 3 months, but what do you hope to do in 3 months is what I would ask them first. And then we could focus there, but is it because you already have a job in hand and you just have to learn to do it? Is it because you think that once you learn it, you'll be able to get a job right away? Because those two things are not realistic. But I would say focus on the basics. Get really good at understanding the machine learning pipeline. Get really good at linear and logistic regression and really understand all the things you can apply to them and all the ways to reduce features, engineer features in the pipeline. I could teach that to anyone in a month, but again, would someone hire them then with that experience? I don't know. Can I add something though to the audience? They might not think to ask.
Definitely.
There's a spirit, and this is a giveaway to the article that Manpreet and Abdul and I are writing. But a lot of people get it backwards. They think they need to have a data science role in order to do data science and be a data scientist. Wow. And we're trying to tell them, let's flip this around. You need to become a data scientist and always be a data scientist. Now, what does that mean? No matter where you are, you find opportunities to do data science. You don't let a role or a job title define who you are. Now that you are being a data scientist and you're doing data science, you'll find over time that as you're caring and delivering data science benefits to those around you, you will have the recognition of being a data scientist. And to retain you, that group of people may even say you're our data scientist and they may even pay you more money. But don't go backwards. Just be a data scientist. And what does a data scientist do? He or she lives the learning lifestyle. What is a true data scientist doing? Always learning the next thing, or always coding the next tool, or always writing the next post to show the world how to do something better.
Absolutely. And in many of your blogs in integrated machine learning and AI, you have a very interesting character called Ta. So I think I know where Ta comes from, but would you mind to tell the audience what's Ta and can you tell us something about it?
Sorry, so that's Mandarin. And I thought, oh, I hate saying he, she all the time. If I say he, she also, but I don't want the ladies to think I'm not thinking of them. Ah, easy, Mandarin, Ta. And so I just, this one post when I was writing the learning plan, I just decided, oh, I'm going to create a mythical character called Ta. And I'm just, and before I knew it, Ta was famous. And Ta is this mythical data scientist that's one of my mentees. And Ta is always doing the best things. Ta is not realistic. And you'll notice I never say he or she, because Ta can mean he or she when spoken verbally in Mandarin. So Ta is Ta he or she? We will never know.
That's
the mystery.
Yeah. Okay. That's it, Tom. Thanks a lot for being on the show. And I hope it was a good session for you as well.
Oh, if people were blessed, then I'm excited.
Absolutely. Thank you.